Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. As you know, this week we're asking you to contribute financially to the station so that we can continue to bring you programming that matters to you and to North Texas. For this hour, we wanted to give you a sample of some of our favorite segments from the TV version of Think, which airs Friday nights at 7 and Sunday mornings at 11:30 on KERA Channel 13. First up, we'll hear my interview from last spring with Dallasite Julie Hirsch, whose memoir reveals the stark truth of her battle with mental illness.
What does it take to survive severe depression? Julie Hirsch experienced her first symptoms of clinical depression as a college student. By the time she was married with two children, and in fact seemed to have everything, the disease had grown severe enough to threaten her life. She writes about her illness and the extreme treatment she underwent to cope with it in her new memoir, Struck by Living, From Depression to Hope. Julie, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much, Chris.
So you started experiencing depression symptoms relatively early, but you write that you had learned from an early age to just bury your pain.
That's very true. My dad was a military officer. There were five children in our family. We didn't have a lot economically, so you learn to buck up, because with five children, that there wasn't a lot of room for hand-holding.
And you ultimately tried to take your own life three separate times,
yes.
But you started fantasizing about suicide long before that, when your son was just a baby.
Yes, that was one of the things that was really surprising for me as I did the research for this book. If someone had asked me if I had postpartum depression, I would have said no, that I didn't, that it really didn't exist. But because I keep so many detailed journals, I went back to research. And yes, after my son was born, there was a period of time where I had suicidal thoughts.
What's really interesting about the fact that you didn't recognize that until you went back is mm-hmm. that apparently those thoughts didn't alarm you at the time.
Well, it's hard to tell. You would think they would alarm mm-hmm. me, but I don't think they did. I mean, I think I just, if you look in the journal, I wrote them and then just went on to the next subject as though they were completely normal thoughts. And I think, you know, maybe that's one of the things that happens in motherhood, that some of these things are forgotten as you pass through that phase.
Now, you did think about what the effect would be on your family, mm-hmm. but at the time that you were very sick, you were thinking they'd be better off without
you. Absolutely.
What do those thoughts tell you now that you're mentally healthy about the state you were in?
Well, one of the things that's been interesting in meeting people and talking to people who have been the survivors of suicide is how devastating suicide is to not just the immediate family, but the community. And being in a healthy state, it's completely obvious that suicide isn't the answer, and that, of course, I would have done horrible damage to my kids. There are studies that have shown that people who commit suicide and have children sort of, in a sense, almost give permission for their children to use that as an option at a future date. And so it's an ongoing action. If you think you're doing the action today, but it's the repercussions are really hard to judge how far off it goes.
You write really compellingly here about your husband, who went from sort of kind and solicitous to just furious with you that you sort of weren't taking steps in some cases in his mind to get better. Do you think that it's possible for someone who hasn't experienced severe depression to understand what it feels like?
Well, that's my hope with the book, mm-hmm. is that people will get a glimpse of what it is like to be inside a suicidal mind. So many people have said that to me. I just can't understand someone like you could possibly think this was a good option. And that's what I tried to do, is put this in a way that the general public could understand it.
You write that at the point that you were ready each time to take your life, you were actually excited about the idea mm-hmm. that it was about to end.
Depression is such a devastating illness, and it's hard to, I think it is hard to understand the depth of despair that you get to, and to think that there would be an end to that despair is kind of an excitement. You know, in retrospect now, I don't see that as an end at all. But at the time, I think that's what my mind allowed me to believe.
The other thing it seems a lot of people misunderstand about depression is that if you've got everything going for you,
right.
you can't be depressed. You had right. a beautiful family, a stable marriage. You had financial resources. In fact, one of the things you felt bad about was the fact that you had more money than a lot of your friends had.
Right. And that's, you know, I think that's one of the things that was so hard for me is I didn't have a tangible problem. And so I felt guilty about getting help or felt, you know, something was really defective about me that I couldn't appreciate what I had.
When you went to get help, did you ever have that sense from the people treating you that like, oh, Julie Hirsch has no business being here?
No, not at all. There was, initially I went to my general practice physician and he basically ran tests on me and said, you know, there's really nothing wrong with you. Go home. And I don't think in his mind he even considered depression. So I wouldn't say that that was, you know, discounting my circumstances or saying that I had it too easy. But there was a misunderstanding. And I think that people should know that a lot of times your general physician do not understand depression. And you might be in the same situation where they say, well, go home, get some rest, eat more healthfully, and you'll get better. Well, sometimes yes, sometimes no.
How many of your friends do you think understood what you were going through?
Well, luckily, we had a very close group of friends that we call our Shabbat group. It's a group of, it started with three couples drinking wine. It's grown to 12 families, and I think there's probably 30 kids between all of us.
Sounds like some crazy Saturdays.
Yeah. Well, what we do is we get together once a month, and someone makes a main dish, and everybody brings potluck. And that group really was critical to my survival. They closed ranks. They were a group that really understood mental illness through their own experiences, and that was incredibly healthy and helpful.
At what point did your doctor start talking about the fact that medication wasn't working, talk therapy wasn't working, and electroconvulsive therapy might be the next step?
That actually was after the third suicide attempt. And I think my my doctor was just at his wit's end at that point and really thought that this was the best solution for me because we tried a long list of medication. It had been a 9-month period that I had been severely depressed. And I think he was worried that I would succeed. And quite frankly, I think he had good reason to be worried about that.
It's really interesting. At one point, you try to explain this to yourself, I think, as much as to your husband. And you said, well, maybe this is just depression is who I am.
Right.
That's a sad thing to say about yourself.
Well, it's kind of funny. I mean, it's not funny, but when I think about it now, I really thought that I had some great mental deficiency and somehow I had just tricked the world, that I had gotten through school, that I had a successful career, that I'd done all these things, and I had just fooled everybody because I work really hard and that I was really mentally defective and that everybody else hadn't clued into it yet. And as funny as that might seem today, talking to me, I sincerely believed that. And so, yeah, that's one of the gifts I think ECT gave for me. When I did that treatment, I can remember the next day looking at my journal and just thinking, who is this person? You know, maybe I didn't feed my kids correctly or do something, but I don't deserve to die for this. And it really took a reset of my brain, and that's what ECT provided for me. And from that point onward, I could begin the real work of managing my depression and not having a recurrence. But before that point, I was in such a skewed state, no matter what I did, it wasn't going to work. I just was going to be depressed.
You resisted the treatment for a long time, and
right.
There are some serious risk factors, memory
right.
loss and some other things. It was your brother's experience on 9/11 that convinced you to do this.
No, actually, I wouldn't say that. I would say, and those things did happen simultaneously. My brother was in the Pentagon on 9/11. He was actually, I think, one row removed from where the planes hit and helped drag bodies out of the Pentagon. Very devastating experience. And in the book, I talk about why could someone go through that experience and not have problems with mental illness? And here I am, sitting in a comfortable home with children and family, and yet I am experiencing this. And I think that shows this is a disease. It isn't a depression isn't a logical reaction to something. It's an extreme irrational reaction. So I think what convinced me to do ECT was, and my husband and I argue about this, he basically said, you have to do this or I just can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And in my thinking, I just thought, well, I can't have a divorce. That would be really bad for my children. Of course, you know, a week before I was trying to kill myself, which makes no sense at all. But I think my husband really was the person who convinced me I had to do this. And so I did, and thank God I did.
You're listening to my interview on the TV version of Think from April of this year. That is with Julie Hirsch. We'll hear more from Julie in a few minutes. Right now, Jeff Whittington and I are here with many people to thank for your support of KERA at 1-888-694-6931. We have Mark Hartung in Corinth, Richard Stingley in Fort Worth, Ron and Jean Briggs in Pottsboro, Texas, Rosario Echeverria in Dallas, Drew Thomas in Denison, and Hannah Kutchel in Dallas.
Yes, please be the next one to call 888-694-6931 or to go online to KERA.org. We're hearing this conversation with Dallas writer and resident Julie Hirsch, and her book is actually called Struck by Living. It came out this year. And you know what? We have that available. If you'd like to hear her story, read her story firsthand, you can get your very own copy of Struck by Living by Julie Hirsch. When you join the station today at the $120 membership level, Chris and I read it, and it's fascinating what Julie went through and her eventual treatment and recovery, successful recovery, which you're talking about in the interview, obviously. It's a great story, and of course, we'd love to be able to send that to you with our thanks when you join the station at the $120 membership level today at 888-694-6931 or online at kera.org.
We are looking for an additional 24 contributions this hour. That is so easy that I sort of wish that we would have had it by the end of last hour. Oh, now we're down to 15. Okay, great. This is finally we're getting to the goals. You know, the other day, Jeff, we had to turn down a challenge grant.
We did, but we did hear from many of you in support of that challenge grant, and that was fantastic. What a great response. And we've had a great response, Chris, all week this week and last week from Think listeners. If you've waited, this is your moment to join the fantastic folks like Edward Mayfield in Fort Worth, Robert Cargill in Longview, and Mehmet Ozkun in Plano. They've all joined the station here in just the last half hour or so. Please be the next one. We're really close to halfway. We've heard from almost 3,000 KERA listeners from all over the region, all over the country, and even all over the world in support of the station and the programming that you find here on 90.1 in Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton. How about you? How about your call to 888-694-6931? Why not you online at kera.org? Why not do it right now?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff. Our goal for this fundraising drive is $700,000.
Yep.
The folks who run the money here, not Jeff and I, base revenue goals on what is necessary to operate the station. That is programming costs, supplies, electricity, equipment, staff salaries. Am I correct in asserting that there are no extra frills around here? This is not a complaint. It's just everybody who works here is really careful about spending money.
Yeah, absolutely. And the numbers for fundraising aren't just pulled out of a hat. There's no, as I said before, dartboard with balloons taped to it.
And, maybe with staff pictures.
Yeah. No, we don't have that either. And there's no. It's not random. It's not arbitrary. Actually, the dollar goals are actually real-time, real-world revenue goals to keep the bills paid, keep the station on the air, to fix stuff that's going to get broken. Stuff wears out, just like at your business or home. So that's why we're raising the money we're raising. We're almost halfway there. And your call right now to 888-694-6931 or online contribution at kera.org will help us get there.
Quite honestly, those of us who work here, it is one of our goals to keep expenses as low as possible so that we can operate on as little revenue as possible. But we certainly do require money to keep this station going. And your support is almost 60% of that. Please give us a call now at 1-888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of personal and professional development courses start this fall. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We are continuing our fall fundraising campaign this afternoon, asking for you to make a contribution online at kera.org or by phone at 1-888-694-6931. Looking for an additional 15 supporters during this hour of Think. Please help us count that down. One of the great things about producing programming here at KERA within this station is that we're able to include interviews with some of the many talented and interesting people who live and work here in North Texas. We'll return now to my interview from last April on the TV version of Think with Dallasite Julie Hirsch, whose memoir is called Struck by Living, From Depression to Hope.
It's kind of amazing, and this is something that you don't remember from immediately after, but you write about him telling you that you picked up the phone after the procedure and called and said something like, pick me up, I'm cured.
It was
that instantaneous for you.
Well, and I actually, my psychiatrist always gets a little bit upset when I start talking about that, because that was a abnormally positive reaction to the situation. Normally, if someone does ECT, you would probably have to do at least 4 treatments before you would see any kind of a lift, and at minimum they ask you to do 6 treatments. And so to have that experience after 1 treatment does happen, very unusual, so I don't want people to have the expectation that that would happen immediately. But the statistics show that it is a highly, highly successful treatment for the right people. In fact, the numbers are somewhere around 80% success rate with the treatment, which, you know, if you think about the bad reputation this procedure has, it's really kind of a shame, because so many people are afraid of trying it because of the negative side effects. And there are some. I mean, I would agree that there are negative side effects.
But it's not the procedure we saw in the movies from 50 years ago.
Well, it's there's a really great book, actually, called Shock, that was written by Kitty Dukakis and Larry Tai, and it traces the history of ECT, and if someone is really interested in the history of ECT, I would recommend reading that book. But Cuckoo's Nest really almost got ECT to the point where it was banished. And there are people today who would still like to banish the procedure. But, for example, you saw Jack Nicholson doing the grand mal seizure. Today, what will happen is you're put under anesthesia, so first of all, you're not awake during the procedure, and you use muscle relaxants as well. So the only thing that is active, if you will, is your big toe, because what ECT is trying to do is evoke a grand mal seizure. Mm-hmm. And so they'll see your toe wiggle, and that lets them know that the seizure took, and then they can bring you out of the anesthesia. So it is nothing like it's shown in the movies.
I know that you had 1 major relapse, and mm-hmm. Talk for a minute about how now you sort of monitor yourself and make sure that you are staying on a course that remains healthy.
I think, and I was talking to a good friend about this the other day, what's so hard about mental illness is a disease that affects the brain is your same tool to decide whether you're healthy or not. Mm-hmm. So it's almost, you're trying to walk on a broken leg, if you can think about it in that way. I do a couple of things. One is I try to listen to my husband, family, and friends. And that is critical. I think anybody who wants to maintain mental health is you have to have a willingness to accept input. The other thing I try to do is proactively think about stresses that are coming up. And if it looks like there's going to be an extreme period of stress, I'll call my psychologist and say, look, I think we need to start up sessions again for a couple months. We'll do that. If it looks like I don't need help, then I'll graduate and move on. Which, from what I've seen of what people do with psychologists, that's a little bit of an unusual situation. Sometimes people will go for years with the same psychologist and never take a break.
Well, congratulations, and we wish you the best of health. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
The new book by Julie Hirsch is called Struck by Living, From Depression to Hope.
That was my interview from last fall with Julie Hirsch. We have copies of her book, Struck by Living, available as a thank you gift this afternoon when you make a contribution at or above the $120 level at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Next up, we will talk about preserving the history of North Texas landmarks. Here's my conversation from this past summer with Jerry Tracy of Historic Fort Worth from the TV version of Think.
What is lost when places where history happens fall into disrepair? And what does it take to preserve them from destruction? Jerry Tracy is executive director of Historic Fort Worth, which works to identify and protect notable locations in an effort to ensure that current and future generations of North Texas will have a tangible link to our shared past. Jerry, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much, Chris. I'm delighted to be here.
Talk about how we experience history differently when we can actually see and point to, and in some cases walk into, places where notable things have happened.
Well, I think everybody at every age understands walking into a place that really makes a statement. And we at Historic Fort Worth happen to own two historic properties, and you can bring in the teenage male who thinks that, you know, he's in charge of the whole world and this is going to be a bad day because he's at a historic location, and he'll walk in the front door and that whole demeanor will change. And it just has its own power. Place connects people to the past and the people of the past, to the great architects of the past, to the construction companies that made things happen in cities. And so you're constantly learning more and more about a place.
What makes a property historic? We've all got history invested in the places that we've been, but not every place goes in that category.
Well, typically it's 50 years old and older. There can be exceptions where something is not quite 50 years old that can be designated a historic landmark at one of three levels in government. Government is the place where designation happens. It doesn't happen in nonprofit organizations. It happens at the city level. It happens at the state level. And it happens at the federal or national level.
On the other hand, you put together every year, your organization, Historic Fort Worth, a list of the most endangered places in Fort Worth. We'll talk about some of them specifically in a minute. But first, talk about how you decide. I'm sure lots of people who are really committed to preserving buildings come to you. How do you decide what gets on the list?
Well, we send out a notice to all of our members and say, please nominate a place in Fort Worth, a building in Fort Worth that is in danger that you care about. And then we do some e-blasts. And as a result of that, we get nominations from the public. And then we have a public affairs committee that meets monthly. And that is the committee that oversees the final decisions on what is on the list.
Number one this year is sort of an interesting choice, the Bluffs overlooking the Trinity River.
Well, yes, it is. And interestingly, the only reason why we know it's historic is because Tarrant County College needed a permit from the Corps of Engineers. And in that permitting process, a federal mitigation process evolved, and so they made several determinations about the resources around the bluff and the bluff itself based on that request for the permit. And so it is an unusual thing. Actually, they determined, as did the Texas Historical Commission, that our bluffs are eligible for the National Register of Historic Places as a traditional cultural property. It's a very unusual category. It's really rare in an urban setting. It's more attached typically to Native American sites. But the Bluff is the beginning of Fort Worth. It's really the heartbeat. And since we have nothing remaining of the fort, this is where it all happened. It was the first area of commerce in our city. It overlooks the stockyards area. You can see it in the distance. It plays a huge role in shaping Fort Worth.
So Farrington Field is also on the list. So many people who have spent time in Fort Worth, generations of parents and kids and grandparents, have memories of this place.
Well, absolutely, and they still can do that. It's still owned by the Fort Worth ISD, which is great. But you begin to know that the development pressure that is surrounding it, particularly to the east, there's an opportunity for some development east of Farrington Field. And you know that unless it's sensitive when it happens, Farrington Field is going to be vulnerable. And certainly the Fort Worth ISD could make another decision. And if they do and they have a field someplace else, then Farrington Field really deserves a chance to be in a new business plan that works for somebody else. And so we're constantly looking at where the the threats could be, even with resources that don't seem quite threatened yet.
So you want to get out ahead of it.
Well, we do. We do. And most people don't understand that because they think preservation comes in late. But if we hear about it late, it's because we've just not heard about it until we know there's an issue. You just can't control that.
You mentioned a new business plan, and I think one thing that's really interesting about what you're doing is that you're not saying that these places have to be frozen in time, and
no.
they shouldn't change, and they can't be used for something else. Talk about how much preservation is enough to make you feel like a place has been taken care of.
Well, if it's designated, let's say it's designated at the national level, on the National Register. If it's a commercial building, then that new plan for that historic place can actually garner federal historic tax credits, which can be partnered with New Markets tax credits or low-income tax credits, and create an amazing business plan with a historic building that you really can't get in new construction. So you know when it's designated, the standard's going to be good, absolutely what it can be and should be. And that puts a conversation from, if it's at the national level, the Texas Historical Commission will do the majority of that conversation with the developer of that project. Certainly not anything we do. If it's designated at the local level, our city's Landmarks Commission will be in a conversation with that developer and our preservation officer. So government plays the lead role in the standards that buildings march to when they're rehabbed and to get all the benefits that go, the economic incentives that go with historic buildings.
Another thing you have on the list is Fort Worth Power and Light. And people would think of a building like this and wonder, well, what else could you do with that besides have a power plant?
Well, we actually put some links on our website. In one state, there is a power high school. There are folks who've looked at that particular building and said, would it be a museum? Would you do retail? Would you do some component of housing? What will that be? Interestingly enough, because of the Central City Project of the Trinity River Vision, the mitigation process that government had to go through for that project, part of the mitigation was to go on and write a National Register nomination for the TXU power plant. And unfortunately, it hasn't been submitted, and we're hoping Tarrant County College will go on and submit it since it's been written.
That's the owner of the building.
That
right
is
now.
The owner of the building right now.
At the very least, you'd like to see the building mothballed for the time being. Can you explain what that means?
Well, mothball is really a professional term that where you would go on and fix any roof leaks. You would board up the windows, and there are several broken window panes in the TXU power plant building. There are roof leaks. You would just make it airtight, basically, from the elements, and just let it be until it's time to do a project there. That would be a wonderful way to take care of that building at this point.
And you're listening to
Jeff and I are just chatting away.
We are. Hey,
we were actually talking about how much we like Jerry Tracy, which is funny.
We were, and we were talking about how much we enjoyed the Julie Hirsch segment, the first part of the hour. If you're enjoying these conversations, call 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org. Looking for 15 more contributions by the end of the hour to make our goal of 50 contributions. So please be the next one.
1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. One of the reasons that we like the idea of doing this Best of Think segment from the TV show is that it allows us to remind you that in addition to having literally world-class guests on the show, people who are known all over, who are seen, 2 days before or 2 days after on The Daily Show or on Larry King or all over CNN, we make an effort to make the show feel like it comes from North Texas, because of course it does. And there are brilliant, really interesting people here and in this area. We make sure that they also have sort of world-class gifts before we bring them on the show, but it's a great privilege to be able to feature that. That's one of the luxuries of having a locally produced program where we can really make it feel like North Texas no matter what the subject. And so we believe this is worth supporting. We know many of you do too as well. In fact, we need 9 additional contributions to stick with our goal. I would love to surpass that goal please don't think, oh, they got nine and they don't need my call, because we will then come up in the next hour and ask you to participate. It just takes a couple of minutes. You go online to KERA.org or you call 1-888-694-6931. Jeff, we do still have copies of Julie Hirsch's book, Struck by Living, available.
We do. You can get your very own copy of Struck by Living at the $120 membership level. Or if you enjoyed the conversation with Adrian Goldsworthy in the first hour today, that book, Antony and Cleopatra, is also available at the $120 membership level. Just nine contributions at 888-694-6931 are online at KERA.org left to go to make our goal for this hour. But of course, our real goal is your participation. And really, it'd be great if we could get to the halfway point on the drive today. And right now, we're getting close. We're in the $320,000s of dollars raised right now. Of course, our overall goal is $700,000. So we'd love to hear from you. We're still waiting to hear from you at 888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org.
We are just had an update. We are up over $330,000 raised. That is fabulous progress. Thanks to everyone who has made that happen. We would love to hear from you next, just as we've heard from Aaron Horn in Sunnyvale. Thank you, Aaron. Rose Taper in Plano. Seth Kranz in McKinney. We would love to be able to read your name next. It's sort of fun for us to hear where everyone's calling from and say everyone's names, and we apologize for the number of names that we inevitably mess up.
Savannah Carlson, thanks so much, from Keller. Also thanks to Vree Whitmore in Carrollton. We'd love to hear from you, and we can easily hear from you if you'll just make that decision to be the next one to call 888-694-6931 or to go online to KERA.org. It just takes a couple of minutes when you become the next new or renewing member of the station, and it's going to make a huge difference in the membership campaign if you are the next one to call.
There's nothing like public radio. You know that already because of the way you listen. I would imagine that even if you tune to other radio stations occasionally, the pattern by which you listen to public radio is different, and the quality of the information you receive is different. You probably do something different with that information. We think that's worth supporting, and you can decide the amount that you want to send. Please go online to KERA.org. You can check out all the thank you gifts there, including everything that's been mentioned throughout the drive. If you've been waiting for us to say once again, oh, we've got the NPR anniversary book or the cake book or the Ken Burns DVD collection, that's all still available. You can ask for it at any time when you make your contribution. Go online to KERA.org or call 1-888-694-6931. We'll come back in just a couple of minutes and resume my conversation with Jerry Tracy of Historic Fort Worth.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's continuing and professional education. Hundreds of personal and professional development courses start this fall. Details online at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Our fall membership campaign is well underway. We have heard from many of you online at KERA.org and by phone at 1-888-694-6931. Many of you are making contributions that keep KERA strong and healthy. We wanted for this hour to give you a sample of some of our favorite segments from the TV version of Think, which airs on Friday nights at 7 and on Sunday mornings at 11:30 on KERA Channel 13. We'll come back now to the second part of my conversation from this past summer with Jerry Tracy of Historic Fort Worth.
So, Jerry, for several years now, single-screen theaters have made the list in Fort Worth. There was a time when a lot of us as kids can remember they were everywhere.
They were everywhere.
And they're not anymore.
They're not anymore. No, they're not. And I guess the one that's on our radar screen the loudest right now is the Ridgely Theater. It's an iconic building for that Ridgely neighborhood. It's a Mediterranean design. It just says you've arrived in Ridgely. And I think the Neighborhood Association is very interested in that building remaining as part of its identity for the neighborhood.
And it is in use now and has been for years.
It is. It is. And it needs work. But there are others looking at plans for that, and maybe they'll be good. You know, we haven't quite had a chance to see all of that. We hope so. But we don't know. The jury's always out until you really know what the final plan is.
What does it take once you have the building preserved to make sure that the stories of that building remain attached to it in some important way?
Well, we have a preservation resource center and library at Historic Fort Worth in our offices, our headquarters on the McFarland House. And we are constantly filling those files of every historic building that are there with the latest information. So you can come and research that at our at McFarland House. You can we go down and pull from that information before we respond to certain questions. And neighborhood associations can also research. I mean, journalists research. I mean, any of those folks. So there are other sources in the city that have components of the past as well. It's really wonderful when an owner of a great historic building will also go on and print up some information just to give the public, because it's cachet to, for them to have the public interested in what used to be in a building they can appreciate today.
How much does it matter to Historic Fort Worth, the organization, that a building that is restored is somehow open and available to the public? Is that a consideration for you?
Well, there are all kinds of types of buildings, and some of them, all of us would love to see open and available to the public. And some are really private businesses that have used historic buildings. We have no greater steward in our city than XTO Energy. I mean, they have taken some of the most iconic buildings in downtown Fort Worth and one in the Stockyards and rehab them at an amazing level. And if they weren't on the National Register, they have been seeking that listing for all of their buildings. So, you know, those are offices that by and large need to be private, but they're generous when you have a special group in and needed a special tour. They could probably arrange for some of that. But that really needs to be their business operation. That is the next plan for those great historic buildings. So, you know, you need a mix of both so that the public can experience them.
And purchasing a historic building that needs work is not for the faint of heart.
No.
Can you talk about some of the special considerations in restoring something even just to functionality?
You need a structural report. You need to hire an architect who understands historic buildings. You need an engineer who understands historic buildings. Even the construction methods to rehab them, it takes a higher level of artistry with historic buildings. We have an event called Preservation is the Art of the City. And the reason it's named that is because you have to have expert craftsmen when you're dealing with historic buildings. They call for all the craftsmen of the past and all those skills. Many of those are almost lost arts.
And things so, like plaster?
Well, plaster are hand-carved urns out of sandstone, or, you know, just any of the methods that were used 100 years ago, 50 years ago even, can be a little bit harder, but certainly easier than 100. And so you're dealing with a work of art. And it also has to work in the business plan that it's in. So, and again, that's why buildings that are designated, the changes that occur to them are conversations between the developer or owner and that governmental level that is where the designation is placed. So you may be talking to city staff, you may be talking to state staff, you could be talking to the National Park Service. It just depends. So they really control that final decision.
How do you feel like the city of Fort Worth compares with other cities of its size and age in terms of commitment to historic preservation?
Well, I think we are lucky because Fort Worth has never been the big glitzy city. And so not everyone's thinking tearing down everything is and building the newest thing, newest building, the newest style is absolutely a must. So we've benefited from kind of lagging back a little bit. Preservation is often the story of the late bloomer. And when there are big corporations that have so much money and they can be anywhere, you see a lot of the downtowns go down. But we've been lucky to have great families who understand the importance of place and pedestrian scale and how that attracts people, and we've been lucky that ethic that has been started by others is embraced by, really now, neighborhood associations, nonprofit organizations, And it is a little bit working, in, I guess, in every way for various levels of our city.
Jerry, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you. It's delightful to be here.
That was my interview last summer on the TV version of Think with Jerry Tracy of Historic Fort Worth. What great information. And we're proud to be able to bring you something that is so directly tied to the history of North Texas. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number to call to support this kind of locally produced programming. You can also go online and make a contribution at KERA.org. Hello, Jeff Whittington.
Hello, Chris Boyd. And hello to you. You might be interested in knowing that we've heard from many of you who are interested in the Ken Burns Excelsior Mega Pack of three DVD sets. You get The War, you get Baseball, plus the new 10th inning documentary, and you get the National Parks. 23 DVDs all told, all together, for your contribution of $240. What a great reason if you are already a member, say you joined last winter or last spring, what a great reason to go ahead and make an additional gift of $240 to the station today at 1-888-694-6931 or via the web at KERA.org. Not only are you helping KERA make this membership campaign a success with your $240 contribution, but you're also getting a fantastic, as I said, Uber Super Duper Pack. I think that's what Justin Martin and I were calling it yesterday.
I think all the series are great, particularly if you're planning any kind of travel coming up or just dreaming of it someday. The National Parks is a great one to see. But the terrific thing is, for this $240 contribution, we don't ask you to choose one of these series. You get them all, which is pretty great.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with Ken Burns. I mean, we were talking about how if you listen for 5 years, or if you've listened for 5 days of a membership campaign, then you are a master public radio listener. Well, Ken Burns is a master filmmaker, of course. He invented what is called in the business the Ken Burns style, and that's what you've come to know as the public television. Public broadcasting look and feel for documentary filmmaking. Well, Ken was the guy who started it all, and these are three of his really fantastic works that can be yours, again, when you join the station at 888-694-6931 or when you make a $240 contribution. That's just $20 a month in support of your radio station. At KERA.org. And don't forget, you get the radio station, too.
Absolutely, you get the radio station. That's the best part of all.
That's right.
We are down to needing four contributions in order to make our goal for the hour. Please, don't get me wrong, we will continue raising money after this, so feel free to help us to supersede that goal. I do want to thank Gary Leistad in Corinth and Sadie Wertheimer in Dallas and Gene Martin in Hearst for their contributions. You know, the other night, Jeff, I was talking to Ken Burns, and he was talking about, you know, the fact that
you guys
kids
just hanging out.
We weren't hanging out. That makes it sound that way. No, I got to interview him. It was my privilege to interview him at UTA for the Maverick Speaker Series on stage. But he was talking about how kids do still read today. You know, so many people lament that kids won't read. And he talked about Harry Potter books. And the funniest thing he said, kids will read these books. They'll line up to get these new books. And he said, and they'll read them. It takes 40 hours to read a Harry Potter book. That's twice as long as any film I've ever made. And I think I was the only one who laughed, but I thought it was hilarious.
Was Jim Lehrer there too? Did he chime in with a pithy remark?
Yeah, it's like me having coffee with all these
That's
people.
Right.
No,
Diane Rehm.
We're not on a close personal friendship basis, but he is an awfully nice guy if you ever have a chance to talk to him.
Thanks for letting me give you a hard time. During your show, even. Thanks, Chris. No, seriously, he's absolutely right. You know, Ken Burns has a lot of great observations about why people are interested in certain things. And, you know, yeah, he might make a 22-hour show about baseball, but then, you know, you
and
listen.
It's all good.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But you listen to the station. Some of you probably listen 22 hours a day. By the way, you can see part two of the 10th inning tonight on KERA TV. If you can tear yourself away from the radio station for a minute, but we know
multitask, do both at the same time.
We know you listen to the station all the time, especially if you're here at this point in the membership drive. We are so close to getting halfway, which gives us the sense, the very welcome and anticipated sense that we can actually accomplish this drive sooner than later. We're over $330,000, so your call right now at 888-694-6931. 6931, or your contribution at KERA.org really does make a difference. It really does make a difference.
1-888-694-6931 is the number. My favorite way to renew my membership contribution is to go online. You can check out Thank You Gifts if you're interested there. You can enter all the information yourself. As Jeff Ramirez says, fill it out all on your own. It's not exactly a big achievement, but it is nice to just get it done and have all the information correct and not have to, repeat yourself or whatever.
Yeah, and it's not any different than if you've ever ordered anything online.
Yeah,
it's not anything.
It's,
yeah, it's just you
fill
out the
deal. There's no secret password or, code name.
You fill out the deal, you select the parameters, and then you click confirm and it's done. You get an email almost immediately confirming it and it's done. And then when you tune back in, or maybe you never even tune away, that you've done your part. And then, you might even, if you give us permission, of course, you don't have to let us read your name on the radio, but you might just hear your name on the radio in the minutes after you contribute. So call us, 888-694-6931, or go online to kera.org and make your contribution. And remember, you can get the Ken Burns Mega Pack. You can also get Adrian Goldsworthy's book, Antony and Cleopatra. We talked to him in the first hour today. Chris had a great conversation with him, available at the $120 membership level. And Julie Hirsch, Dallas author and advocate for mental health awareness, her book, Struck by Living, about her battle with depression and ultimate success, and the ongoing project for her that it is also available today at the $120 membership level. But you got to call or go online to get involved.
We are looking for 3 additional contributions in order to make our goal for Think Today. Won't you please be our heroes and make that contribution in any amount? Just takes a couple of minutes. You call 1-888-694-6931 or go to kera.org. So many of us are so busy all the time. And, you may already be involved in several volunteer organizations, and you've got a family, and you've got a job, and you've got things going on. The great thing about public radio membership is that you become a part of the team, quite honestly, that helps produce public radio, make it available in your community, not just for North Texas, but also for you and for your own family. And you can do that sort of conveniently by sending a check, and we're able to, or calling in with your credit card number, and we're able to put that money to work for you. This is not like buying your way out of an obligation. It's actually a really helpful way to support public radio.
I'd like to thank Dr. Sean Sluka in Richardson for becoming a member of the station, renewing their membership. Thank you so much.
It was a friend membership that we saw.
Hey, fantastic. Thank you so much. This is a perfect time when we're getting close to halfway on this drive. If you've been considering making a larger contribution to KERA at the $1,000 or $1,500 membership level, what a great time to do it at 888-694-6931. We're less than $20,000 away from halfway on this membership campaign, and it starts to pick up speed once we get halfway, because we all kind of work the same way, and you'll hear that we probably sound a little more excited, more confident, and those of you who've been listening and been waiting, you've been wondering if your contribution is necessary. Well, you'll see that your contribution really does help us get that much closer. And we know you're out there waiting for the last sort of push, and that's okay. It's okay. But that means that some of you need to step up right now and call 888-694-6931 or go online to kera.org.
We know that things are tough in the world. Consider that somebody who used to make a regular contribution maybe is having a tough time this year, and maybe that person who, without ever having met you, has sort of been making the contribution that made it possible for you to listen all along is not able to do that now. Maybe you want to step up knowing that other people are struggling a little bit. If you're doing okay, the great thing is your contribution amount is entirely your business. We suggest these amounts because it makes it easier. We know that the average contribution is about $120. However, we have plenty of people who give far less than that, and we have plenty of people who give far more. That is your decision, and we would never tell you exactly what the right amount is based on your budget. But it is important that we hear from everybody who listens, that we hear from you. It's an important statement, and it also allows us to, keep the station financially healthy and strong. The place to go online is kera.org, or you can call us at 1-888-694-6931.
If you'd like for us to suggest a level, though, call up call us up and ask, what would be right. Maybe $365 is right. That's a dollar a day. You become a day sponsor. You get 3 on-air messages on the day of your choice. You can make it a special day for a friend or a loved one. It's just $365, and that's works out to, yes, it is, $1 a day in support of your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas, Fort Worth, Denton, online at KERA.org. Please don't wait. Please do it right now. We'd really like to get as far as possible today, and we're only going to be able to do that if you step on up and make that call or make that online contribution.
We are very transparent about the need to raise money for the station. We are very careful to spend the money that you give us very, very carefully. And the truth is, just about all of us who work here are members ourselves, so we have a vested interest in making sure that that money is spent carefully. Love to hear from you now at 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Thank you so much.
The Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.